This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Today, this is the week that we memorialized George Herbert Walker Bush, as, you know, it was pretty much impossible to avoid if you were watching television. And I don't mean that in a snarky way, but so we waited until after the funeral and everything to have a conversation about George Bush. But I don't think that this week should go by without visiting his legacy. On the line with us is Lamar Waldron. Lamar Waldron is a JFK historian and author. The Hidden History of the JFK Assassination is his most recent book, Ultimate Sacrifice and Legacy of Secrecy. He wrote in collaboration with me about the Kennedy assassination and the Bobby Kennedy assassination and the Martin Luther King assassination. And Lamar, welcome back to the program.
Great to be with you again, Tom.
So let's just go through this, Lamar. Why in your opinion is talking about the crimes of George Herbert Walker Bush important?
Well, talking about his many crimes is super important today. Like you said, we've got nothing but, you know, praise for the last week, with pretty much in the mainstream media no mention of his many crimes. And even some progressives I know are now looking at Bush Sr. and Bush Jr., that's what I call them, 41 and 43, with rose-colored glasses, as if they're, boy, those guys were so much better than Trump. Boy, those were the great old days, which is just, I mean, not true. I mean, Bush is not some aberration. He's the logical outcome of the crimes that began with Bush Sr. and continued with Bush Jr.
Yeah, a lot of us referred to the Bush crime family, and we didn't mean it as a joke.
Well, and that's exactly right, you know, because the Trump family is not the first crime family in the White House. The Bush family was, and then again was. And if more people don't realize that, you know, get ready for President Ivanka in 2024. You know, I mean, here's just the highlights of what we'll be going over today with Bush Sr. I mean, breaking laws to win elections, even committing treason to win elections, dealing with a special prosecutor, enriching himself, cronies, and supporters, misuse of pardon to avoid prosecution, committing obstruction of justice, needlessly killing thousands of innocent people, civilians, groveling to Saudi leaders and supporting other brutal dictators, creating problems in Central America that still impact America today, and, of course, economically screwing working families just to enrich the already wealthy. I mean, that's not just the template for Donald Trump. That's the template that he's following that was set by Bush Senior. And,
right.
and more important than even all of that, the story of Bush Senior's crimes has important lessons for all progressives and the Democrats now controlling the House going forward, because they cannot commit the same mistakes that allowed Bush Senior to avoid prosecution, or they're going to wind up letting Donald Trump and his cronies and family avoid prosecution.
Yeah, I think these are important lessons for the nation as a whole. So let's just go through it here. The George Bush Senior's father, Prescott Bush, I just want to reality check some things with you. Is it true that Prescott Bush, when he was at Brown Brothers Harriman in the 1940s during World War II, and then later as United States Senator, is it true that he helped Hitler and the Nazis during World War II?
It's totally true, and it's even worse than that. And again, as we go through, we are going to debunk some stuff. I mean, there's an internet rumor that Prescott Bush, Bush Sr.'s father, helped in the business plot, the coup to try to overthrow Roosevelt in the early 30s. That's actually not true. But yeah, he's certainly guilty of, in fact, you know, Brown Brothers Harriman was sanctioned for handling what they were. Brown Brothers Harriman, where Prescott Bush worked, handled the Nazi assets in America before World War II. The problem was, of course, that would be a problem for most people, right? Even though we weren't in a declared war with Germany, you know, most people, you know, could not stomach that. But Prescott Bush had no problem, so he helped handle that Nazi money, but they kept handling that money after the U.S. declared war. So they were officially sanctioned by the U.S. government. That money and the assets were grabbed up.
This was the Roosevelt administration that went after them.
Exactly right. And one of the ways they were being compensated wasn't just through direct payments, but they were given stock in certain companies and assets in Germany. One of those assets was called Silesian Steel. Okay. And Silesian Steel, and I'm probably mispronouncing that because I'm not great with German, and it may even be a Polish name, because it was near Auschwitz. And Silesian Steel made their profits from Nazi slave labor. So the Roosevelt administration, they grabbed those assets, they froze them until late in the 40s, I believe 49 or 50. And because, you know, thanks to people like Richard Nixon and McCarthy, then by 1949-50, the big enemy for America was communism, not the fascists we'd sacrificed so much to defeat. So Prescott Bush was given back those assets from the Nazi slave labor, and some of that money was used to start the Bush political dynasty, because he then became a senator from Connecticut, it was, I believe. So I mean, talk about, you know, having these dirty origins. So then his son, the one we call Bush Jr., he, you know, that's his father growing up in the 50s as this wealthy man.
You mean Bush Sr.?
Yeah,
Bush Sr.'s father was Prescott. Yeah,
Bush Sr.'s growing up. You know, and Bush Sr. You know, we credit his you know, service in World War II, but he's getting started in business where his father is a, you know, powerful and wealthy U.S. senator. You know, partially with this money from the Nazi slave labor.
Amazing. So, was Bush Sr. involved with the Bay of Pigs or with the assassination of JFK? I've read rumors of both.
Huge on the Bay of Pigs, tons of rumors, but an old friend of ours, Gordon Winslow, the archivist for Miami-Dade County, thoroughly debunked. A lot of people, you know, there were some ships in the Bay of Pigs operations that, you know, one had a, you know, name similar to Barbara Bush and all this kind of stuff, but the timing does not work out. So Bush was not a big CIA bigwig or in any way, you know, significantly involved with the Bay of Pigs. That's just not true. And again, if people look for Gordon Winslow and George Bush and Bay of Pigs, you'll find where he debunks that. The assassination of JFK? No, I mean, he was giving a speech. Bush was, because he was, you know, he was politically minded. I think he was running for office then, for Congress, or getting ready to, in another town, you know, far from Dallas. Some people say, aha. He was giving a speech in a town far from Dallas, so clearly he was laying an alibi, so therefore he must be guilty.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't work. He did actually rat out a lower-level Republican, a young Republican official in Texas that had said bad things about JFK. So he actually, you know, so Bush Sr. was guilty of a lot of stuff. The JFK assassination is not one of them.
Okay, so Bush Sr., was he involved with Nixon and Watergate?
Oh yeah, big time. Well, I mean, he was involved with Nixon big time. So
how?
Bush, by 1970, he's a member of Congress from Texas, right? Nixon, you know, who knew he was guilty of a lot of stuff, but Watergate had not surfaced yet in the fall of 1970. We were still almost 2 years away from that. But Nixon wanted Bush to run for the Senate instead of defending a seat in Congress. And by the way, this is in my book, The Hidden History of Watergate, The Hidden History. So to help all of the Senate candidates, Nixon had one of his aides named, several of his aides, including one guy named Herbert Kalmbach, set up an illegal $3.9 million campaign slush fund called Operation Townhouse. And because the money was dispersed out of a, you know, the illicit cash was dispersed out of a back room in a townhouse near DuPont Circle in Washington. According to veteran AP and Newsweek reporter Robert Perry, after Watergate, this is a quote, Bush acknowledged that his campaign received $106,000 of that illegal money from the townhouse project. So, what happens? Does Bush get prosecuted? No. This poor Nixon aide named Herbert Kalmbach served 6 months in jail for the illegal slush fund. But you know, even
and the money went to Bush Sr.
Yeah, that went to, you know, a lot of it went to Bush Sr. But even though Bush was the main beneficiary of this whole legal operation, he was not even charged. So
why is that? Because he was a member of Congress.
Well,
because he was wealthy and powerful.
Again, so at this point, you know, all the charging is coming through the Justice Department of Richard Nixon, which was one of the most politicized Justice Departments in history, because two of Richard Nixon's attorney generals wound up going to prisons, something our current Attorney General Whitaker should keep in mind if he doesn't want to go to prison. So Bush skates, and in gratitude for giving up his House seat, Nixon makes Bush Sr. his UN ambassador. So Watergate finally unfolds. Bush then winds up becoming the head of the Republican National Committee. And basically, one of Bush's jobs was to try to dig up dirt on people working for the Senate Watergate Committee. And there was a former Kennedy, a mafia investigator, because, of course, as we know now, people didn't know then, Watergate the mafia was a huge part, even the central part of Watergate, because Nixon had these long mafia ties. Well, Bush couldn't let that happen or come out, because he was still trying to keep Nixon from getting impeached. So he started leaking this dirt to the media and to other members of the committee about one of the Senate Watergate Committee's investigators, a guy by the name of Carmine Bellino. So that was Bush's job during Watergate, was all of that.
It's basically dirty tricks.
Yeah.
On behalf of Nixon.
And speaking of dirty tricks, while he was Republican National, head of the Republican National Committee, this young Republican operative by the name of Karl Rove got caught doing dirty tricks, what some people might call political crimes, and Bush did a very perfunctory investigation, and even though there was taped evidence against Karl Rove, Bush cleared Karl Rove, and of course we all know what Karl Rove went on to do. So Bush was one of those people that just managed to skate completely through Watergate.
Amazing. We're revisiting the life and times, and occasionally the crimes of George Herbert Walker Bush, with historian Lamar Waldron. Lamar Waldron's most recent book, The Hidden History of the JFK Assassination, and we'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be right back. We're doing a deep dive into the life of George Bush the Elder right after this. So, and welcome back. So, Lamar, how did Bush end up CIA director rather than going to jail, after all this stuff?
So here's one of the most important lessons that Democrats need to learn from how Bush wound up not only not going to prison, but becoming CIA director. So as many people underestimate how many people were prosecuted as a result of Watergate, there were actually 70 people that were indicted or who pled guilty. Just a huge number, and you won't find that in any American high school history book, unfortunately. But there were more. There were many more. I mean, as we've seen with the Operation Townhouse alone, Bush...
You mean many more crimes, not many more prosecutions?
Oh, right. Well, there are actually many more people and many more crimes. Okay. Not many more prosecutions. But there were people that should have been prosecuted. What happened was this. Some Republican Party elders basically went to the leaders of the Democratic leaders of the Senate. We had both the Democrats had both the Senate and the House then, and they said, look, you know, if you prosecute everybody that could be prosecuted, then you're gonna ruin the Republican Party. You're gonna ruin the two-party systems. So we cry uncle. So for the more minor crimes, and compared to a lot of the crimes, yeah, the slush fund wasn't that big, but still, he should have been prosecuted. He should have gone to prison like Herbert Kalmbach did, the guy who was giving him the money, out of the back room of the townhouse. But the Democrats, in just trying to be nice, said, okay, look. And by the way, the Republicans said, look, we'll make sure that none of these people that you let skate, like Bush, you're not going to hear from them. They'll go into private business. You won't have to worry about them. And so the Democrats were fine.
So the Democrats knew that George Herbert Walker Bush had committed this crime.
Yeah, because the guy who gave him the money went to prison.
Yeah.
So in other words, but like I said, the Democrats, they were trying to be nice. And of course, we know what happens when you try to be nice to a snake; it will bite you. So, not only did Bush not slink away quietly into the night, he'd be running for president soon, but before that, you know, Gerald Ford, who's also dealing with guys, his top aides, like, name, you know, Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld, appoints Bush Sr. to be the CIA director. Now, this is a critical time as CIA director because finally, once Watergate was behind us, the Senate and the House are both now focusing on the CIA plots to assassinate foreign leaders and to spy on Americans and to do all sorts of dirty tricks, to test LSD on Americans, just a whole raft of stuff, right? And so Bush's job as CIA director, when Gerald Ford appointed him, was basically to obstruct justice, protect Gerald Ford, who was, of course, a member of the Warren Commission, and some of the very people the CIA had hired to assassinate Castro without bothering to tell then-President Kennedy in the early 60s, several of those people were involved in JFK's assassination. So, you know, that couldn't come out, or that wouldn't make former Warren Commissioner Gerald Ford look very good, and he was going to run for, he had been, you know, he wound up first appointed as vice president, then taking over when Nixon resigned. So he wanted to run for a full four-year term on his own. So basically, Bush's job was to obstruct justice. He not only did that, he protected at least a couple of murderers and hindered the investigation of the murder of a Senate witness.
Wow. We'll continue this in just a moment. We're talking with historian Lamar Waldron. We'll be right back. Coming up on 23 minutes past the hour, we're talking with historian and author Lamar Waldron about the legacy of George Herbert Walker Bush. So just to recap, he was involved in this criminal activity with the Republican National Committee, basically a slush fund, a bribery fund or a cash payoff fund, hundreds of thousands of dollars. The guy who handed the money to George Bush Sr. went to prison, but Bush Sr. didn't. Instead, he got bumped up to CIA director, where his job was to protect basically a number of the people who had been involved with the Nixon crimes and Gerry Ford as well.
And I'm glad you mentioned Nixon crime because, of course, several of the key people involved in Watergate, Howard Hunt, Bernard Barker, Frank Sturgis, all went to prison. They had all been part of the CIA mafia plots to try to kill Fidel in the early 60s that had then been used by some of those same mobsters to as cover for their murder of JFK. So there was a lot to protect, and he did. But get this. So in the early 70s, Chile elected a socialist president that Nixon illegally basically deposed, you know, and had killed using CIA operatives. So, you know, as well as supporting people in Chile. I don't want to imply it was like a CIA invasion. It wasn't like Panama, but the CIA was there on the ground helping, you know, murder the Allende in Chile. And so, but the Allende's socialist ambassador to the United States, Orlando, and I'll mispronounce this name, Leterrier, I think is how this is the best way to say it, but I'm sure I'm mangling it. So he was living in Washington, you know, trying to, you know, rally support to take back his country that had been overthrown by this U.S.-backed coup that had installed these brutal dictators in Chile. So some people in the CIA did not like that, so a couple of CIA assets blew up, with a car bomb, not only the former Chilean ambassador, but also an American citizen right in Washington, D.C. And Bush Sr. immediately went into cover-up mode and basically protected these people.
As CIA director.
And get this, so there were several Senate witnesses, including some of the people that helped to kill JFK, people like Sam Giancana, Jimmy Hoffa, and a guy named Johnny Roselli, who were murdered. And Roselli had testified several times in private to the church committee investigating, you know, the CIA mafia plots. And so his body shows up in a 55-gallon oil drum, his body dismembered shortly after he had met with Florida godfather Santo Trafficante, who employed two of the Watergate burglars who had been working for him during Watergate. So that was obviously a mess of connections there. So basically, Bush just kind of ordered the CIA not to give the Miami police the information they needed to try to solve this murder of Johnny Roselli. So he was a terrible CIA director, committed, you know, crimes of obstruction.
Well, from the point of view of Gerald Ford, he was a brilliant CIA director.
Well, to Ford, right. And Jimmy Carter is always fond of saying, of course, Bush went to him and said, look, you know, once Carter won, you should keep me on as CIA director. And Carter is very proud that he did not do that. So for a very brief time, Bush went back to private business. But, you know, the business he went back into is almost beyond belief.
And what's that?
Well, because Prescott Bush had died in the early 70s. And, you know, Prescott Bush, you know, was a wealthy man to start with. He became more wealthy as a senator, as often happens. And, of course, he still had that Nazi money. And so
we're going to have to pause this right here. A moment of suspense. Lamar Waldron, historian and author Lamar Waldron, helping us unwind the legacy of George Herbert Walker Bush. This is fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating. We'll be back with more with Lamar after this break. It's coming up on 28 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. It's Friday. We're recapping the week. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
And starting at the end of the hour, we'll be picking up Anything Goes Friday. So, you know, whatever you'd like to talk about is just fine today. We'll be back with more from Lamar Waldron. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 34 minutes past the hour. On the line with us, historian and author Lamar Waldron, talking about the legacy of George Herbert Walker Bush Sr. You know, well, he wasn't senior, but, you know, who we refer to typically as Bush Sr. Lamar, were you short of finishing a thought just as we hit the break there?
Well, what we're getting to is now we're in the late 70s. Okay, Bush is in the process of leaving his CIA director post. He's going to be in private business for a couple of years. But two big things are going to start to enter the story of George Bush Sr., as I call him, and that is the Middle East and Latin America. They're going to come to dominate the rest of his criminal life. So on his way out the door as CIA director in the fall of 1976, there is one more cover-up he does. Some CIA assets blew up a Cubana airliner, killing all 73 people on board. And these were you know, the CIA says they were former CIA assets. A lot of evidence they were current CIA assets. But the bottom line is they had to be protected. One of them, who was allegedly involved, even though he denies it, but there's a lot of evidence that other people take the other side, is a guy by the name of Louis Posada. And so who was, and these guys were like, you know, CIA-backed Cuban exiles from the early 60s, basically. Posada had allegedly helped to try to assassinate Castro for Richard Nixon 6 months before Watergate. So basically the CIA, like I say, on Bush's way out the door, he's occupied with Latin America, and the CIA is basically helping these CIA assets, you know, try to avoid prosecution for blowing up this Cubana airliner and killing all 73 people. So Latin America is going to figure in again very soon with Bush. The other thing he does, so Bush finally gets his inheritance from his father, including, you know, what's left of the Nazi money from World War II, right, and Hitler. Mm-hmm. And so he goes into business with a family in the Middle East. You know, guess what family Bush goes into business with in the Middle East?
Bin Laden's?
Exactly right. The Whoa. Bin Laden.
Now, Lamar, just reality check something for me. I have heard that on the day that that John Hinckley Jr. tried to assassinate Ronald Reagan, that his father, John Hinckley Sr., was having lunch with George Bush Sr. And on the day of 9/11, George Bush Sr. was hanging out with Bin Laden's brother. Are those two things true?
Yeah, I believe they are.
That's so weird. I mean, you know.
I believe they're both. You know, but again, you know, for the 9/11, yeah, and Bush is, believe me, Bush will figure in again as far as another thing that helps 9/11 to occur. But yeah, so that relationship that Bush Sr. is pursuing the morning of 9/11, dining with one of Bin Laden's brothers, that begins in the late 70s. Okay, so with that Nazi money, I mean, you cannot make this stuff up. But, of course, Bush didn't want to be a businessman. He wanted to be president. So you know, he runs for the nomination. He loses the nomination to Reagan, who is has much more overt racist appeal, though Reagan's racist appeal wasn't overt. It was covert. But
Bush opposed when he ran for the Senate from Texas before he got in as a congressman. He opposed the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act.
But he did eventually come around on that.
You're right.
Whereas Reagan used carefully coded words in giving that speech down in Mississippi in the town where the three civil rights workers were killed and calling for states' rights. So basically Reagan did a better job getting that racist vote, which, as Donald Trump learned, that can get you the Republican nomination. So but Reagan, smart politician, tapped Bush as his vice president. So but then we have a problem. We have these hostages who were taken at the US Iranian embassy in Tehran, okay? And Jimmy Carter is trying to get those hostages out. And just like in 1968 when President Johnson was trying to broker a last-minute peace deal to end the war in Vietnam years before it really ended, Nixon torpedoed that. So Jimmy Carter is trying to cut a deal for those hostages. People don't remember. People remember, or they say, that Reagan won in a landslide. You know, Jimmy Carter was running against two people, not one. There was a guy by the name of John Anderson in the campaign as well. But even with all that, 2 months before the election, in 1980, Jimmy Carter was within the margin of error of Ronald Reagan. If Jimmy Carter had been able to get those hostages out, and you can imagine that wave of euphoria that we would see.
He would have won the election.
He definitely could have won the election. So that could not be allowed to happen. Now, you know, Reagan doesn't have any CIA experience. His vice presidential nominee did. His running mate, George Bush, did. He was the former CIA director. Jimmy Carter's CIA director, Stansfield Turner, had kind of cleaned house of a lot of the bad apples and stuff, and a lot of those bad apples, you know, still had their CIA contacts and slush funds. And so basically, as was reported on the front page of newspapers in Tehran at least twice that fall, the Republicans, you know, basically Bush and Reagan torpedoed, were cutting a back deal with the Ayatollah to say, hey, if you won't release the hostages before the election, we'll cut you a better deal after the election.
Basically, right. Iranian President Bani Sadr wrote an op-ed about this. You know, he's now living in the United States, wrote an op-ed about this for the Christian Science Monitor. You can still find it online.
Yeah,
you know,
it was no big secret except to the American news networks.
Right.
And of course, you know, I mean, they just didn't want to report this. This was somewhat reported in Europe at the time because they had, you know, more correspondents in Iran. So yeah. Bottom line is Bush apparently played a pretty key role in the October surprise, you know, basically committing treason, if not, you know, technically legal treason, then certainly, you know, dictionary definition of treason, if not legal definition, because we weren't, apparently in America, treason, you have to have a declared war to officially be treason. But yeah,
right.
Most people would call what Bush did treason. And of course, it like Nixon in 68, it worked.
Yeah.
So basically, you know, Bush Sr. then is in the White House as the vice president.
Right. So, by the way, time is sliding by, Lamar. We need to tighten this up. How was Bush Sr. involved in Iran-Contra? We just touched on that a moment ago.
Right. So now we've got, you know, the Latin American ties form when Bush is helping to cover up, you know, basically having the CIA protect the killers of those Cubans. And so, and there were lots of other Cubans that should have testified back in the mid-70s. They were protected. So basically, you have this revolution going on down in Nicaragua, and you have a new government there that the U.S., Reagan, Bush, they don't like, so they want to fund basically CIA-backed mercenaries to overthrow the
so-called Contras.
Right. And so these mercenaries called the Contras, they need money. Congress blocked that money. Where is it going to come from? Well, from Bush Sr.'s old buddies in Iran who wanted weapons and stuff as part of that deal, and there were other hostages been taken in Lebanon due to a horrible bit of foreign policy there. So basically, they wind up selling, since Congress won't fund the Contras in Central America, they basically, who could also be called death squads, basically they sell the arms to Iran and they use those profits to fund these death squads, these murder squads in Central America. And Reagan, you know, Reagan, after the shooting and everything that he survived, you know, he's got early Alzheimer's. He's saying things that you know, barely get reported here, but is covered well over, you know, in the foreign press. So he's not even all there some of the times. So all the evidence pretty much shows the guy at the top of the pyramid, you know, with people like Oliver North and those guys, was George Bush Sr., the vice president. You know, Dick right. Cheney under Bush Jr. was not the first vice president to basically run the country. To some degree, that was Bush Sr. under Reagan. So all these horrible things happen. The Democrats make several key mistakes, though. They don't really have an investigation of the October surprise. This guy named Lee Hamilton, this centrist Democrat who's running the committee looking, he lets Bush slide on October surprise because, you know, Bush couldn't have been at some key meeting, but he won't say where he was. Was he with a mistress? Who knows? But and then they do things like letting Oliver North, who never wore a uniform when he was working on Iran-Contra, wear his uniform and basically use the testimony as a platform. And so the Democrats really mishandle that. There is a special prosecutor. Bush tries really, really hard, you know, to block, you know, that special prosecutor getting important information. Bush, after committing more election crimes to become elected president, people close to Bush, like Caspar Weinberger, the former Secretary of Defense, you know, they're not only getting prosecuted, they're getting convicted. They're facing prison time. And the goal is to get Bush, but Bush does something to make sure he doesn't get prosecuted.
Remarkable. Lamar Waldron with us for the hour, revisiting the legacy of George Herbert Walker Bush and the presidency. So, anyhow, we'll be right back with more of Lamar Waldron right after this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's sort of the best of the rest of the news here of learning, you know, the things that we didn't hear in the media this week about George Bush. Get a whole picture. And welcome back. So, Lamar, how was Bush Sr. involved in Reagan's schemes to destroy unions and cut taxes on rich people like himself?
Well, I mean, basically, again, after the, you know, by the early 80s, Bush is making comments like, I mean, I'm sorry, Reagan's making comments in front of news people about how he was in the Army in World War II and helped to liberate the concentration camps and stuff that just leave people like the German, he's telling us like the Chancellor of Germany, they're just like slack-jawed because they know that's a lie. So, you know, when Reagan's in front of the cameras for a press conference, I mean, he can appear alert and everything like that. When he's not, somebody on CNN said during Reagan's funeral, you know, they would never let Reagan be alone with press people because they didn't know what he would say. So Bush Sr. is the guy who's driving a lot of the stuff for these big tax giveaways to the wealthy, dismantling. You remember when every community in America had a savings and loan, right?
Yep.
Now it's only through that movie, Christmas movie, It's a Wonderful Life, the Jimmy Stewart has the savings and loan. And people, you wouldn't go to some faceless national bank to get your mortgage. You would go to your neighborhood banker, and he knew you. And you had your money in his savings account, and he paid you a certain rate of interest. And for a couple of percent more, he'd loan you the money for your house. It was a great system. The Republicans in Bush basically just, they removed all the controls. They basically just raped that whole system of, you know, almost put the country into recession, and basically they all enriched themselves. There was a really good reporter for the Wall Street Journal by the name of Pete Bruton, I believe, wrote a whole book called Bush and Wall Street that just detailed how Bush and his cronies and families made all this money out of basically screwing the middle class. And so, you know, that's Bush's legacy. But to go back to Iran-Contra, Bush should have been prosecuted for Iran-Contra. And, you know, of course, you can't. There are people who differ. Can you prosecute a sitting president? You can sure prosecute a president when they leave office. So after Bush loses the election to Clinton, but before he leaves office, he pardons six of the most important Iran-Contra figures, including the guy he was really close to, his Secretary of Defense, Caspar Weinberger. And so, but the Democrats...
And Weinberger was the one who could have spilled the beans on Bush's...
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. A lot of these guys could, Weinberger especially, but the Democrats, you know, instead of holding hearings into those pardons, they don't. Mm. And so, you know, and then soon they will, you know, lose control of Congress to Newt Gingrich and the Contract on America. So, again, you know, Bush just skates for that, but he does you know, two last things. You know, one is in the late 90s, so he's back as a private citizen ex-president, okay? He goes to Saudi Arabia as part of a big business deal, also including another former CIA director's daughter. And this article was, by the way, written by a great reporter by the name of Dan Moldea, the country's top Hafa expert. So he wrote this great article in the late 90s. So Bush goes over to Saudi Arabia, literally sits lower, you know, than the dictator of Saudi Arabia, kind of groveling at his feet for this business deal. Out of that whole trip and attempt to do all this business comes all these special conditions for Saudis traveling to America, where they don't have to do the same kind of visa and passport, all the same stuff that most people in the Middle East have to do. And then we know, of course, how that was then taken advantage of. I mean, I'm not saying Bush did that intentionally,
right,
to leak 9/11, but that was one of the side.
But that was what the hijackers, the 9/11 hijackers, used to get into our country.
Exactly.
Remarkable. Lamar Wald, historian and author Lamar Waldron on the legacy of George Herbert Walker Bush. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Okay, Lamar Waldron is with us. Lamar, we have about 6 minutes. The thing that has always struck me as one of the most consequential things that George Bush did, Bush Sr., was invade Iraq. And, you know, on false pretenses, the whole, you know, babies and the, you know, the hospital and all this kind of stuff, incubators. I don't think a lot of people realize Osama bin Laden told the New York Times in 98 that he was going to attack the United States if we didn't shut down, if we didn't do two things. Number one, raise the price of oil because we were stealing the natural resources of his homeland. And number two, shut down the bin Salman, or whatever the name was, that the Air Force base, the U.S. Air Force base in Saudi Arabia, that was built by George Bush when he was president to stage the Iraq war. Because, you know, God forbid, American soldiers, men were drinking alcohol and women were showing their elbows and driving cars. And can you speak to that?
I'm so glad you mentioned the first Iraq war, because a couple of things. Number one, most people, not a lot, actually remember there was an Iraq war. But you know, before that, there was the dry run in Panama when several, you know, aid organizations have determined Bush basically committed war crimes. You know, that was not a bloodless coup. I mean, at least, some people say thousands, but even Amnesty International say, okay, at least 300.
Are you talking about Bush taking out Noriega?
Exactly right.
Was that because Noriega knew where the bodies were buried, financially anyway? Panama is a big dark money finance center.
Oh, well, now we know with the Panama Papers, a huge dark money thing. Yeah. These rich guys like Bush don't like to pay taxes. Noriega had, you know, we've been giving a wink and a nod to his drug trafficking since the time when Bush was CIA director.
Right.
So, yeah, so 300 civilians needlessly died in Panama due to George Bush, definite war crime. And that was his, you know, dry run. For the Iraq war, you know, basically his ambassador tells Saddam, yeah, we don't care what you do with this little country, Kuwait.
Right, April Gillespie.
I'm like, okay, I'll go for it. But then, Bush is toadying to the Saudis, because when they order, they're the people who ordered him not to depose Saddam, because they were worried about Iran getting too much influence. So we go to all this trouble to invade and conquer most of the country, but Bush is this, you know, he's obeying the orders of that Saudi dictator not to depose Saddam, which also sets up that next Iraq war, which comes about because Bush Sr.'s last great way that he hurt America and at least oversaw the committing of crimes, if not did them himself, was the role that he and his close advisors played in helping his son, Bush Jr., steal the presidential election in 2000.
Now, what was that role?
Well, when you go back and, well, first off, he helped him get the nomination because Bush Sr. had the ties to the Sun Myung Moon organization. And if you remember, John McCain...
You're talking the religious, the guy who said he was the reincarnation of Jesus.
Bingo.
Yeah.
And so, who was super right-wing, and so Bush had...
And a wealthy munitions manufacturer from South Korea.
Right, right. And so, let's go to South Carolina, Bush against McCain for the nomination. McCain's doing better than anybody expected. If it looks like McCain is going to take South Carolina, if he does, Bush Jr. may not even get the nomination. And so, unleashed, in addition to a lot of dirty tricks, you know, that Bush had people use before, like the racial stuff,
like the Willie Horton stuff.
The Moonies are unleashed on South Carolina to spread all these horrible negative rumors about John McCain, and Bush Jr. miraculously gets that.
Was that the main rumor, that McCain had an out of wedlock black child, and what the pictures that they were showing of the McCain family included this Pakistani girl or Bangladeshi girl that they had adopted?
Exactly, yeah. Right. Because in South Carolina, among white conservative Christian white Republican voters, that was anathema. So
yeah.
He helped him get the nomination. You know, Bush's brother helped to, in Florida, the Florida governor helped to purge. One of the biggest reasons was, and this is why voter suppression works, why the Republicans keep using it, they had purged, I want to say it's between 20 and 40,000 mostly black people from the voter roll.
Yeah, I've heard numbers as high as 90,000. The ACLU lawsuit, I thought, said 60,000, but whatever, you know.
There was a settlement, but then even more than that, remember when there was what's now called, proudly called by Republicans, the Brooks Brothers riot to try to keep votes from being counted down in South Florida?
Right.
And these were congressional aides on the congressional payroll using, this comes full circle back to Bush Sr.'s father, Prescott Bush and that Nazi money. So now they're using classic Nazi tactics of basically breaking the law, because you can't have paid congressional aides go, you know, bully people not to count votes. That's illegal. That's against the law. But, you know, Bush Sr.'s advisors helping his little junior.
So they financed that.
Exactly right. Well, they didn't just find it; they organized it. These guys were being paid. These guys were on the congressional.
And then at the same time down there, you had John Roberts and Kavanaugh both helping prep the legal team.
Exactly.
For the arguments before the Supreme Court.
Exactly. Bush Sr.'s, you know, advisors, they were, you know, because Bush Jr. was Bush Jr., right?
Right.
You know, he'd been a governor of Texas. But, yeah, so it was Bush Sr.'s, a lot of his legal teams and people loyal to him were the ones helping to ram this through. And, of course, the Supreme Court, the conservatives on the Supreme Court, they go against, you know, they were always for states' rights and everything, except now, when it would get a Republican elected, and suddenly, no, states' rights, we've never heard of that. We have to stop the counting of the votes in Florida. So that's the final legacy of Bush Sr. as helping little Junior become president, which brings us another horrible Iraq war, which brings us the unpreparedness for 9/11, and brings us the Republican crash of 2006 that the country is still trying to recover from, working people, and now there's been another Bush-style big tax giveaway to the wealthy, which is, you know, in places, I have friends in Los Angeles. I mean, just it distorts the whole real estate rental market just horribly when you give all this money to the wealthiest people. But that's the legacy of George Bush Sr. is laying the groundwork for the newest crime family, but by no means the first crime family, the Trump crime family.
Wow. And we have 40 seconds, Lamar. So Bush's war in Iraq set up the eventual war in Iraq, but it also set up 9/11, right?
Well, and again, because the Saudis could come in and out of the United States so easily, you know, that's why I think it was at least three of the Saudi hijackers the morning were pulled aside. I believe it was up in Boston. Mm-hmm. But then, because there were Saudis, even though they were suspicious, they were allowed to get back.
Because Bush Sr., when he was a private businessman, was doing business with the bin Laden family, and he got this special deal written into American law that Saudis could come and go.
Right, he was one of the people pushing for that special thing, is, you know, to curry favor with the Saudis. So the big lesson for Democrats: don't let the Trump crime family get away with anything. Prosecute everybody you can possibly prosecute, or else we'll be looking at President Ivanka in 2024.
There you go. Or Tiffany, or
exactly.
Udi or Kusei. Lamar Waldron, his latest book, The Secret History, The Hidden History of the JFK Assassination. Thank you, Lomar.
Thank you so much, Tom.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.